Monkeypox cases in non-endemic countries top 1,000. Parts of Shanghai back under lockdown due to new COVID cases. Minimum jeepney fares in Metro Manila and Regions 3 and 4 go up by a peso. And later on in the program, we'll speak to Joey Faustino of the Coconut Industry Reform Movement on President Duterte's order allowing government to tap the cocoa levy fund. And in sports, the Boston Celtics take back the lead in the NBA Finals. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Topping the midday news, over 1,000 cases of the monkeypox virus have now been detected in 29 non-endemic countries. The World Health Organization, though, does not recommend mass vaccination against the virus yet. It adds no deaths have been reported so far from the outbreaks. Greece on Wednesday became the latest country to confirm its first case. The initial symptoms of monkeypox include a high fever, swollen lymph nodes, and a blistery chickenpox-like rash.
There are antivirals and vaccines approved for monkeypox, but these are in limited supply. WHO is developing a coordination mechanism for the distribution of supplies based on public health needs and fairness. The sudden and unexpected appearance of monkeypox in several non-endemic countries suggests that there might have been undetected transmission for some time. How long? We don't know. The risk of monkeypox becoming established in non-endemic countries is real.
Here at home, Health Chief Francisco Duque III rejected calls to shut borders amid the monkeypox threat, but he adds he has ordered strict monitoring and surveillance for the virus.
It is premature to be closing borders to travelers from these endemic areas. Ang utos ko as main service, sa BOQ, is to be very strict, to enforce strict screening standards. Symptom screening, no? Galing sa mga endemic countries or non-endemic countries with risk of monkeypox, dapat alamin yung symptoms.
The epidemic threshold for dengue already exceeded in three Philippine provinces. These are Cagayan, Isabela, and Nueva Vizcaya. A local health official says the number of dengue cases in the whole of Region 2 increased by more than 800% during the early part of this year compared to the same period in 2021. The official sites increased mobility and the rainy season as the primary factors for the outbreak.
Nakalimutan na natin po yung nag-search and destroy ng Aedes breeding places natin. Mm-hmm. Kasi nakatuon na tayo sa COVID lang tayo nakatuon.
We have already coordinated with the different SBUs to start their forest strategies. Yung forest strategies po is some Aedes search and destroy operations of Aedes breeding areas. Mm-hmm. Then yung second S is seek early consultation. When you have the signs and symptoms of fever, headache, body pain, abdominal pain, vomiting, then self-protective clothing.
The Philippine Health Department says it has given its regional offices additional funds to cope with a spike in dengue cases. Parts of Shanghai sealed off once again as authorities continue to pursue a dynamic zero COVID policy. The financial hub emerged from a two-month citywide lockdown last week, but some residential compounds have been closed off again as officials try to shut down transmission chains as soon as possible. The 2 million residents of the sprawling Minhang district are again confined to their homes for 2 days. They will be tested on June 11 and restrictions will be lifted once testing is complete. Shanghai reported 4 new symptomatic cases Wednesday. The Philippines' health chief claims the country has now contained the threat of COVID-19. Secretary Duque says daily cases did not see a spike despite mass gatherings during the election campaign season. But Duque still urges the public to remain cautious as the virus may further mutate.
So far, given our measures, our interventions, mukhang contained na siya, no? And the data will support that claim. But at the same time, we are realistic to accept the fact that this virus is notorious for mutations. It is capable of springing surprises at every turn.
Moderna says its new COVID-19 booster provides stronger protection against the Omicron variant. The so-called bivalent vaccine was tested in a trial of 814 adults. It produced 1.75 times more Omicron-specific neutralizing antibodies compared to Moderna's original COVID jab. The group that got the new shot also received slightly superior protection to the ancestral strain of the COVID virus. The results were broadly welcomed by experts who agreed Moderna's vaccine is now the front runner as a booster. In business after the World Bank, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development sharply lowers its global growth forecast for 2022. The OECD sees the global economy growing 3% this year, down from its 4.5% estimate back in December. It also downgraded its forecast for next year from a 3.2% expansion to just 2.8%. The main culprit, Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
The economic outlook we are presenting to you today is much more pessimistic than some months ago. Russia's war is indeed imposing a heavy price on the global economy. Global growth will be substantially lower with higher and more persistent inflation. Projections for consumer price inflation have been revised significantly upwards. We project inflation in 2022 to average 8.8% across the OECD before receding slowly in 2023 as supply chain and commodity price pressures wane and monetary policy measures continue to take effect.
The OECD adds the extent to which growth will be lower and inflation will be higher will ultimately depend on how the war evolves. But it says it is clear the poorest nations will be hit the hardest. More on the impact of the Ukraine-Russia conflict, this time on the Philippines' food supply. Agriculture Secretary William Dar says it's high time for government to aim for food sovereignty. Dar admits the Philippines is starting to feel the pinch as the conflict drags on.
Itong Ukraine and Russia are global food producers. They are main players in the global food market. Nag-export sila. Even fertilizers kasama, they are also manufacturing. So tayo ay impacted heavily. Even dun sa processing sector, sa wheat, ay kung ang mga bansa na nag-produce ng wheat, kagaya ng India, ay hindi na mag-export and other countries, that will really impact to us. We need now to look at import substitution in a big way. So this is the time na talaga yung food sovereignty has to be now our overarching goal. Para with the available resources, I mean significant budgetary resources, ay talagang itatas natin yung level ng local food production.
Agriculture Secretary William Dar says an additional 9 billion pesos is needed to sustain rice production in the country this wet season. He says the funds will be used for fertilizer subsidies for farmers. Dar earlier warned of a possible 6 peso per kilo increase in the price of rice by the end of the year due to high cost of production. This will make it harder for the incoming Marcos administration to achieve its goal of selling rice for as low as 20 pesos per kilo.
I have yet to understand the assumptions
the
of yes, the math.
The math.
Because it all points out it will take some time before we can go to that near
20 pesos. I am for working the program design and the solutions through value chain approach to make it possible to go near 20 pesos. Mm-mm. But when you say the timeline is to produce it and sell rice early 2023, 20 pesos po, then you have to heavily subsidize.
Magsasaka Party List Representative Argel Kabatbat agrees with the Agrarian Reform Department that rice prices can be lowered by 2023.
The aspiration of the incoming president is to have a 20 to 30 pesos price of rice. And for your information, the 30 pesos per kilo has already been achieved by the provincial government of Nueva Ecija when Governor Umayi put up this provincial food council. That directly bought palay from our local farmers in Nueva Ecija and sold it directly to the consumers. Another pilot project in Tarlac, now extending to Nueva Ecija, ito po yung dinidiscuss ni Secretary Bernie Cruz ng DAR about Mega Farms Project.
Yeah,
they were able to guarantee 36,000 per hectare net income to the local farmers. Mm-mm. We can really do that with the political will, with the necessary policy changes, and of course, budgetary support.
Unlike outgoing Agrarian Reform Secretary Bernie Cruz, the next DAR chief believes it is not possible to bring down rice prices to 20 pesos per kilo anytime soon. Our correspondent Lady Vicentia now joins us with details. Lady, what else did the congressman Conrado Estrella III say?
Fermina, incoming Agrarian Reform Chief Representative Conrado is not yet confident it's possible to bring the price of rice down to 20 pesos per kilo. This is in contrast to the statement incoming Agrarian Secretary Bernie Cruz. This could materialize as early as 2023, but Estrella said this needs to be further studied with a continuous hike in oil and fertilizer prices. He believes 27 to 28 pesos per kilo of rice is more feasible with the current situation. Estrella also clarified that elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. did not commit to lower prices to 20 pesos. Rather, this is an aspiration and that he continues to be realistic about it. The newly appointed DAR chief recognizes the pressure in following the footsteps of his grandfather, Conrado Estrella Sr., who was the first agrarian reform secretary under the Marcos dictatorship. To boost the local production, the use of rice seeds, modern technology and soil analysis is key for Estrella, but he sees it will be challenging to convince farmers to be open to new ideas. Under his leadership, Estrella aims for the department to be able to provide land titles to agrarian reform beneficiaries, aside from providing a certificate of land ownership award. He also plans to hire a data scientist to help him with the research needed to run the department. That's the latest from our end. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Lady. Lady Vicentia there joining us on the line. Back here in the studio, jeepney commuters woke up to higher fares Thursday morning. That's after transport regulators approved a 1 peso fare hike for public utility jeepneys operating in the National Capital Region as well as Regions 3 and 4. The hike brings the base fare in jeepneys to 10 pesos. The fare increase is in response to a petition filed by transport groups amid the unabated rise in fuel prices. Meanwhile, the regulatory board will hear a separate petition to increase the base fare by 5 pesos on June 28th. Motorists again call on government to suspend the excise tax on fuel as oil prices continue to soar. Let's hear more from Evelyn at Chico.
As fuel prices rose, worker Janelle has started to use his bicycle and decided to temporarily retire his motorcycle to minimize expenses.
Standby muna sa bahay kasi mahal yung gasolina ngayon eh. Mahirap yung buhay. Noong dati kasi magkano lang yun, nasa 50 lang yun eh, 53. Ngayon, wala, tumaas na ngayon. Magkano na ngayon ng 78 na ngayon. Mahirap ang buhay.
Gasoline now retails at 74 to 97 pesos per liter, while diesel is at 75 pesos to 90 pesos in Metro Manila.
Bayan patrollers have also sent fuel prices in their areas where fuel now costs more than 80 pesos per liter. In Palawan, prices are now more than 90 pesos per liter. Motorists are asking the government to consider suspending the excise tax on petroleum.
Sana iano nila yung excise tax ng petrolyo para kahit pa paano matulungan yung mga katulad naming motorista.
Kung makakatulong sa pangkalahatan, okay lang po.
Mas okay po yung tanggalin muna yung tax para habang wala pa, at least mababa yung konsumo ng namin.
Removing excise tax means a slash of 10 pesos per liter for gasoline, 6 pesos for diesel, and 5 pesos for kerosene. If government decides to suspend the biofuels component of fuel, gasoline will be cheaper by 3 to 4 pesos per liter and diesel by 1 to 2 pesos per liter. But incoming Senate Ways and Means Committee Chairman Sherwin Gatchalian says it is better to increase the targeted help to the transport sector.
Kahit doblehin pa natin yan to about 6 billion, mas mura pa rin siya kaysa mawala yung 200 billion plus. No? So para sa akin, yan ang mas epesyente pa. Pero hindi ko rin sinasara yung isip ko sa pagtatanggal ng excise tax, Alvin, lalo na kung humaba itong gera.
Gatchalian is not in favor of raising income tax but is studying the possibility of raising taxes on non-essential goods and services. The senator says the BIR should resolve collection efficiency issues, but when asked if the tax bureau should collect the tax on the Marcos estate, Gatchalian insists the issue is political.
Political ploy nga yun, yung narrative na yun eh, no? Lumabas lang ng politika eh. Obviously, politika, story ang politika at pang-politika lang yun. Makikita ko natin, lumabas pa yan sa mga katunggaling kandidato. No? At kung mayroong ganyan nga, dapat lumabas sa bibig ng BIR yan, lumabas sa bibig ng DOF.
Finance Secretary Carlos Dominguez earlier said the government is bent on collecting any tax due on the Marcos estate. Alvin Olchico, ABS-CBN News.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. taps political scientist Clarita Carlos to join his cabinet. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. And we are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Monkeypox cases in non-endemic countries top 1,000. Parts of Shanghai back under lockdown due to new COVID cases. Minimum jeepney fares in Metro Manila and Regions 3 and 4 go up by a peso. And in sports, the Boston Celtics take back the lead in the NBA Finals. Back with more news, retired political science professor Clarita Carlos will be the national security advisor of President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Carlos was once the president of the National Defense College. He was also government's consultant in peace talks with the Moro Islamic Liberation Front. Senator Miguel Zubiri calls Carlos an exceptional choice for NSA head, noting she is an expert in geopolitics. Zubiri adds, Carlos's gender in a male-dominated position should not be an issue. Incoming Press Secretary Trixie Cruz Angeles says high engagement and number of followers may be used as basis for the possible accreditation of vloggers to cover Malacañang. Angeles says they are currently reviewing an existing policy on vlogger accreditation, which she said was put in place during the Duterte administration. She adds their main focus is to determine if vloggers would be allowed to attend regular palace briefings.
Hindi pa rin natin po alam kung tama na nga po ngayon ang panahon na nararapat para ma-include sila, ano yung level of inclusion, ano yung number of, kumbaga, will they be regular, like the similar to the Malacañang Press Corps, mm-hmm. or will they just be able to cover events? Do we create events for them? Right now, tinitignan din po namin yung engagements, kasi engagements really means that people are responding to what you have written or shown in the case of vloggers, no? Na at interesado sila or nai-involve sila dun sa sinasabi. So ngayon ang kinoconsider namin both following and engagements kasi magkaiba po yung...
Bloggers played a huge role during the campaign of President-elect Bongbong Marcos with some given priority access during UNITEAM sorties. Bagong Alyansang Makabayan urging the police to respect the rights of the people to conduct rallies during President-elect Marcos's inauguration. The Progressive Group Secretary General Renato Reyes says the incoming administration needs to hear the grievances of the people. He also asserts rallies without a permit should not be violently dispersed. Earlier, authorities said illegal rallies will not be allowed near Marcos's inauguration at the National Museum on June 30.
The authorities are fixated on the concept of no permit, no rally. So anything that takes place without a permit, they think they have the grounds to violently disperse and suppress the people. So impunity yung nangyayari, no? It has been this notion of the police that they can do anything so long as four protesters failed to present a permit. Our challenge to the incoming administration is just the image that you really like to project to the world that on the first day of Mr. Marcos in office, you will be doing a reprise of the 1972 Marcos dictatorship where people are prevented from expressing themselves.
Well, weeks before he is due to step down, President Rodrigo Duterte signed an executive order that will allow government to tap the multi-billion peso cocoa levy fund to modernize the country's coconut industry. Coconut farmers, however, are wary only wealthy coconut farm owners will benefit and the participation of farmers will remain limited. Joining us now to tackle this issue is Joey Faustino of the Coconut Industry Reform Movement. Joey, good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the invite today, Carmina.
All right, so campaign promise fulfilled. That's what the palace is calling this order. Tens of billions of the cocoa levy fund now made available to coconut farmers. The initial thought of once you hear this, Joey, is that, of course, this would pave the way for the massive reforms and development in the coconut industry. But the question remains, will it? What are your expectations?
Well, for one, Carmina, you should consider that this law, RA 11524, is not really that favorable to the sector. We had hoped, all of us in the coconut industry reform movement, we've been around since recovery of this ill-gotten wealth on the coconut levy funds, in courts, in the legislature, and with the executive. Now that it is a law, as promised, we are seeing that the funds really were just distributed to government agencies instead of being dedicated to the farmers directly.
And what is the danger there when you add these layers of bureaucracy and putting the money still out of reach from the coconut farmers? What's the danger?
We are very apprehensive, Carmina. We are very apprehensive that this is not going to be how we expected the funds to help the coconut farmers. Now, referring to the Executive Order 172 that was issued June 2 this year, I wonder if there is any prior agreement between outgoing president and incoming president. Because as far as we're concerned, this EO should set the parameters for the funds to be used. This is a requirement of the law that was passed last year. However, will the next president take this into order as well? It might interest you to know that the assets that were made into the Coconut Farmers and Industry Trust Fund is a block of shares in San Miguel Corporation and corporations like the United Coconut Planters Bank and the Coconut Industry Investment Fund oil mills. Mm-hmm. Both San Miguel and the UCPB is on the wish list of the Marcoses. Imelda Marcos has laid claim to these companies before. So I'm not really sure what to expect with the incoming administration in terms of utilization of the coconut levy funds via RA 11524. But it's a law. It's right. A law, and it has to be implemented.
But do you have apprehensions here?
Great apprehensions.
Do you have misgivings that, you know, after decades and decades of fighting for the funds, you know, really watching this very closely, that you're sort of back where you started.
We're back to where we started from. You will not even get this law if it were not for civil society, the farmers who trooped and marched from Davao City to Malacañang in 2012. That's what started the ball rolling. And this is the role of civil society, but we don't have much of the participation of civil society anymore, especially with regards to the implementation of this law. In fact, one of the misgivings we have on this law is that government has sole responsibility of managing the funds, and that the sector, not even a representative of the coconut farming sector, would be allowed to have a look into how the funds are managed.
And that's a major red flag right there, because as you said in an interview, this limits really, it doesn't even limit, it negates the participation of the industry itself.
Correct. This law follows the principle that the farmers do not know anything about funding and therefore should not be a part of managing the funds. But again, this is their fund. This is a jointly managed fund between the government, because it's public fund, and a sector, according to Supreme Court rulings.
In 2019, Joey, President Duterte vetoed a similar bill. He cited lack of vital safeguards. But you're saying as well that what he signed into law is a comparatively worse version of the 2019 bill. Tell us more about that. Why do you think so?
It is a far worse version of the law, precisely because the law that was, or the bill that was vetoed, had an allocation to programs of coconut farmers in the communities. Like, it was saying 35% should be of the funds should be utilized to develop value addition in the communities, build enterprises. Another 15% goes to farm improvements, etc. So that bill was viewed on the development exactly of the communities. But this law that passed, RA 11524, actually distributed the funds to around 16 agencies, including DPWH. So now DPWH can use part of the coconut levy fund that was recovered as ill-gotten wealth. They can now use this to build roads. But I was always questioning this, because building roads is part of a government obligation.
Correct.
And you should not charge the coconut farmers for that.
Correct.
Because you don't do that to any other sector as well.
And especially since this incoming administration had made public of their plans that they will push for massive infrastructure development to benefit farmers as well. So if that's their plan already, then this should be a separate initiative.
Oh, yes, we've been saying, and you can see the executive order also stating that the Coconut Farmers Trust Fund is separate and distinct from the general appropriations. That's quite clear. But when you go to the details, it somehow merges into one.
But let me ask you this, Joey. For it to be truly reformative, transformative, and meaningful for the coconut industry, what do you think must be there? And what do you think must the incoming administration do so that you won't be left with this feeling that you're sort of back at square one?
The coconut industry, Carmina, is based in 69 provinces. all mostly rural areas. The manufacturing sector is in the urban areas. So it's a far cry from a farmer in the rural area to get to the manufacturing sector. And this is why you have a lot of levels. You have a lot of traders that come with the industry. Mm-mm. So the answer to your question would be develop it straight, direct, in the communities themselves, and make local economies prosper. Give money power, purchasing power to the poor farmers whose blood, sweat, and tears really contributed to this much money that has been recovered.
Joey, let me ask you, though, before you continue, as you correctly stated a while ago, you know, you've been really watching this issue from day one, from the recovery to the various processes involved. If it is so simple as you present it to be right now, right this minute, why couldn't government do it? Why couldn't they go directly to the farmers, as you put it? Why not infuse the industry? Why couldn't they do that?
As I said, this is how important civil society is, so that government can have a different perspective on how things are going. Not all of your economic managers would understand how the farm works and how the farm people live. So it's important to listen to civil society. In fact, in 2012, if we had not done that long march from Davao City to Malacanang, the judiciary that had the decision, the executive that was just waiting for something, did not know what to do with the money, and the legislative wouldn't also know what to do, which law to pass. And it took the farmers to do this, to talk to all of them so that they can, you know, work together on this issue. That's how important it is. And you were mentioning about participation now. We have not had much participation in crafting the so-called Coconut Farmers and Industry Development Plan. That is the subject of this EO-172 that was issued recently. Mm.
So what do you think is the way forward here? Do you think the incoming administration should build on what the outgoing Duterte administration has signed, or do they craft their own? And this time really having the industry players there participate as well, the stakeholders themselves participate. And do you think that's even possible considering the history?
Well, first and more importantly, consultations with the sector, with the coconut farming sector, is vital if you want this to be genuine reforms in the industry. But as I said, I would not know what to expect, since the origins of this is ill-gotten wealth. So I really have no idea how the next administration is going to deal with this issue. Mm. And I'm so apprehensive for the coconut farming sector.
We're going to have to leave it at that. We run out of time. Joey Faustino, their advisor for the coconut industry reform movement, thank you so much for joining us today. Great to hear your insights. Take care and keep safe. From there, we're going to take a break now. Still ahead, the Boston Celtics surge ahead in the NBA Finals. This is Dateline Philippines. Stay with us here on ANC. Back with more news. In the U.S., an 11-year-old girl relives the horror of last month's school shooting in Texas before a panel of lawmakers. Mia Cirillo, a fourth grader at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, recounted terrifying details of the moments when 19 of her schoolmates and two teachers were killed by an 18-year-old gunman. Cirillo also recalled what she had to do to survive.
He shot my friend that was next to me, and I thought he was going to come back to the room, so I grabbed the blood and put it all over me, and
What did you do then when you put the load on yourself?
Just stay quiet, and then I got my teacher's phone and called 911.
And what did you tell 911?
I told her that we need help and to send the police in our classroom.
Cirillo is still healing from bullet fragment wounds in her back and wrestling with trauma. She fears a mass shooter could target her school again. The House Oversight and Reform Committee also heard from relatives of victims of the mass shooting in Buffalo, New York.
If after hearing from me and the other people testifying here today does not move you to act on gun laws, I invite you to my home to help me clean Zaire's wounds so that you may see up close the damage that has been caused to my son and to my community.
Congressional Democrats have been pressing for action and calling for stricter gun control in the wake of the mass shootings. Russia rejects suggestions grain stuck in Ukrainian ports is fueling the global food crisis. Moscow's invasion of Ukraine has not only devastated farmlands but also disrupted crucial deliveries. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Monday about 20 to 25 million tons of grain were currently blocked in Ukrainian ports. He warned that could grow to 70 to 75 million tons in autumn. But the Kremlin disputes that figure. It says the grain reserves are being exaggerated and are too small to have an impact. Russia has repeatedly denied blocking the passage of cargo ships loaded with Ukrainian grain. It instead blamed Western sanctions for contributing to the food crisis. The brutal battle for the city of Severodonetsk will determine the fate of the whole Donbas region. That's according to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Russian troops are laying waste to the city in an assault aimed at controlling eastern Ukraine. The region's governor said Severodonetsk is now largely under Russian control following a day-long shelling by Moscow. He also admitted Ukrainian forces may have to withdraw soon from the city to better fortified positions. In sports, the Boston Celtics have regained the advantage in the NBA Finals. ABS-CBN North America Bureau Chief DJ Manotok now joins us for a recap of Game 3 between the Celtics and the Golden State Warriors. DJ, good afternoon from Manila. Over to you.
Good evening, Carmina. Well, this time around, the Boston Celtics withstood that daunted third-quarter Warriors run and then turned on the Jets in the fourth quarter to pull away with a 116-100 victory in Game 3 to take the 2-1 series lead in the NBA Finals. It was a phenomenal 1-2-3 combo by Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Marcus Smart, who combined for 77 of the Celtics' 116 points. Stephen Curry led the way again for the Warriors with 31 points, and Klay Thompson finally with his breakout game with 25 points. This time, it was though a dominant 47-31 rebounding edge by the Celtics that gave them a lead of 22-11 points on second chance points. Warriors coach Steve Kerr conceded they did not finish strong enough and the rebounding discrepancy was just too much. For Boston coach Ime Udoka, he's happy they finally kept their composure in the second half.
We didn't have enough in the fourth. Yeah, I thought the offensive rebounds were just a killer. You know, they had like 20 something second chance points, and that was really the difference in the game. You know, we made several stops, especially in the second half, where we had a chance to, you know, cut into the lead or make a little push, and they got offensive boards. So those were tough.
It was really to keep our composure and then not get sped up. Felt last game we weren't our best at attacking the rim and finding our outlets, and our spacing was much better tonight. Guys being patient and finding the driving lanes, and then obviously getting to the basket, the second chance points and offensive rebounds were big for us. Defensively, I hit some tough shots in third, obviously. 4-point play, 7-point play, whatever it was with the flagrant foul there, but we didn't fall off the cliff offensively like we did in other games. 33-25 in that quarter, we kept scoring, and then obviously had a big fourth quarter. So that was the main key to continue to be solid on offense and, you know, stay out of the teens like we did in the first two games in the third quarter.
Carmina, the winner of Game 3 after a final series is tied 1-1 goes on to win the title 82% of the time. Now the Celtics add this. They retain home court advantage. They will have two more games at home and only need two more wins to get the franchise's 18th NBA title. Game 4 is for Friday night in Boston. Casey?
I can almost hear my Celtics friends cheering as early as now, but don't hold your breath.
It's not going to be that easy.
It's not going to be that easy. It's not over yet. And obviously, I'm a Dubs fan, right? Okay. Thanks, TJ. Nice to see you again. Thanks for staying up for us. Thanks a lot. All right. In entertainment now, Korean actor Kim So-hyun now in Manila. He will hold a fan meeting on June 10 at the Mall of Asia Arena in Pasay. The event is organized by a local clothing brand, which tapped him as endorser in 2011. Kim is known for his roles in popular Korean dramas such as Dream High and It's Okay to Not Be Okay. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Consentino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.